Going to be in Ephesians chapter 1. Ephesians chapter 1. Hope you'll find your Bible and follow along. I hope you picked up an outline and fill in a few blanks as we go through here. We're going to talk about what it is to be blessed and to be blessed people, how blessed we are by God. A lot of us don't know what a blessing is. Read a story a while back about a man who had bought a Ferrari. That is, for those who don't know, a car, a very fancy car. And he was so proud of this car that he had saved for forever and ever that he was actually looking for a priest to bless his car. You've heard of things like that. And so the man who bought the car went out and found the first priest and said, "I'd like for you to bless my Ferrari." And the priest said, "Well, I know about blessings, but I don't even know what a Ferrari is." Well, the guy said, "Well, I hate for you to bless something you don't even know what it is." So he went out and he found another priest, and he said, "I'd like for you to bless my Ferrari." And the guy said, "Well, I know how to bless things, but as for a Ferrari, what is a Ferrari?" And he said, "Well, you're not going to work either." So he goes to the next guy, and he just asks him up front, says, "Do you know what a Ferrari is?" And the priest said, "I know exactly what a Ferrari is. It will go from 0 to 100 in 7.5 seconds. It has won 21 Grand Prix races in this world. It sells for $180,000. Sure, I know what a Ferrari is." He said, "Well, can you bless mine?" He said, "Well, I'm not sure what a blessing is." And so the guy had a tough time that day. I think we're in that group of people. Sometimes we don't know what a blessing is. We've been blessed so much that when we realize how much God's blessed us, we sit back sometimes and go, "Wow, God really is good to us." We don't know what a blessing is because we don't stop long enough sometimes to see. What I want us to look at this morning is just how blessed we are. And it doesn't have anything to do with cars. It doesn't have anything to do with Ferraris or monies or houses. We're going to talk about spiritual blessings this morning. And we're going to talk about the first 10 verses of the book of Ephesians. In the original Greek, this was all one big sentence. From verse 1 to verse 10, one big sentence. And everything in here talks about just how blessed you are. And what I'd like for you to do for just a minute, if possible, I'd like for you to just really focus this morning on what God's saying to you through His Word. If you could just forget about the people sitting around you, if you could forget about what you got going on later today, what you had go on yesterday, what kind of week you had, if it was just you in here by yourself, I'd like for you to focus that way. Just put the blinders up and spend a few moments this morning thinking about how this relates to you. The first thing that you find out that we're blessed is because down in verse 4, it tells you, well, verse 3 was read a few moments ago. It says you're blessed in the heavenly realm, spiritual blessings. Verse 4 says He chose us in Him before the creation of the world. God chose you, verse 4. That's the first blanks if you're following along on your outline. You've been chosen. And that's what a blessing is that God chose you. You didn't choose God. He chose you. And when you sit back and go, "I choose you, God," well, that's great. But you understand God chose you first. Back in elementary school, in my grade, there were two real athletes. In the sense of really good athletes. And most of the time when we played on the playground, we would get those two to be the two team captains because you didn't want them on the same team. If they got on the same team, they won hands down every time. But if you could get them separate, you could have a lot more evenly divided teams. So one of the problems was you always wanted to be picked. You only could have a certain amount of players to play, whether it be baseball or football, and there was always way more folks showed up over there to see who was going to get to play that day than what you had room for. So, you wanted to be chosen. And boy, you could sit there and you could kick the dirt and you could look tough and act tough and, you know, spit, whatever it took to look tough. But if you didn't get chosen to play that day, man, you left with your head down thinking, I didn't get picked. And you'd have to go to the monkey bars, you know, or something along those lines. I remember being a sophomore in high school. Our high school started as sophomores, not as freshmen like many of you have in here. sophomore in high school, in a high school where there were 350-something just in my class. And when we went out in off-season, we went out with the juniors and the seniors. Nobody even knew the little sophomores, and I was one of them. One of the games we played the first day was kind of a football-soccer type game. We had to choose because we didn't have a big group. I got to be on a team. I was chose last, dead last. And it was more like, we don't even know what his name is. You take him, you know. But the day we played, it just so happened that they forgot about the only sophomore out there was me. They forgot. You know, somebody guard the sophomore, the kid. Nobody even knows whose name it is. And so they didn't even pay much attention to me. Scored three times that day. The next day, we lined back up to play the same game again. A senior that day, by the name of Steve, looked me in the eyes, and this was a senior. I was a sophomore. I knew his name. He looked me in the eyes, and he said, "I want him on my team." I was picked second. And I floated from where I was standing over to his side in his line. It made the whole week, the whole month, the whole school year was worthwhile because Steve had said, "I want him on my side." Oh, I felt good. I had been chosen. Do you realize that's what God has done to you? He has looked out and he said, "I choose you. I want you to be on my side." And you replace that word "you" with your name. He says, "I want Trey on my team. I want Weldon on my team. I want Bobby on my team. Whoever it is, I want you on my team." And you know, God doesn't go around picking teams according to to looks, to size. He doesn't go around going, "Man, he's an athlete. I'll take him." He doesn't go around going, "Man, she makes lots of money. I want her on my team." He doesn't go around saying, "Boy, he's got a lot to offer, so I really would like him more than I'd like her." No, actually, we find out from the book of John, in John chapter 10, when Jesus talks about the good shepherd, he actually says, "I call everyone to be my shepherd. I want to choose you to be on my team, and I don't pick you because of your color or because of your education or because of anything else." You are extremely important to God. He chose you and He wants you on His team. And I ask you, so once He's chosen you, have you chosen Him? Once He said, "Come over to my side," have you said, "Okay"? You see, that's the next step. Because if you haven't signed up, if you haven't said, "Well, I want to be on your team, Lord," then you're missing out as one of His children. So the first thing you find out that he does in verse 4 is he chooses you. You have been chosen. Notice verse 5. You'll find a second thing, the second way that you have been blessed this morning. Verse 5 says, "He predestined us to be adopted as His sons." You have been adopted as a son. Let me tell you a little bit about adoption in the first century. Adoption in the first century, a father had complete control over his children. Now, some of y'all are going, "Well, my dad had complete control over me." No, they had complete control to the point they owned you, much like a slave would have been owned. A father would have owned a child. He could have sold a child if he wanted to someone else. That's the kind of control that they had. Fathers controlled the children. You could adopt someone who was selling a child if you did it three times. Three times you had to be bought. And at that point, all the responsibility would be assumed by the new family. There would be a price to pay. You couldn't just go out and go, "Hey, I take you. You come go with me. You're not his son anymore. You're now my son." It didn't work that way. A price had to be paid to be adopted. I grew up in a family, and I've told you all a little bit about that. My family, my real father died when I was very young with cancer. The dad that I have now, what would be my stepdad, although I don't see him as that, his wife was killed in an auto accident. So my mom and my stepdad married, and he became my dad, and he's the only dad that I actually know and remember. We combined two families, the Morgans me and two sisters, and the Bairds, three sisters and a brother. It worked out. God blessed that family well. We never took one another's names. I never became a Baird like my dad, nor did they become Morgans like what mom's name or our name was. But we became a part of a family that adopted one another. That I look at my sisters or my brother today and I say, I love the Baird girls as much as I do the Morgan girls. I like my brother actually better than I like any of them. And he's not even my real brother. You think about those things. But I know for a fact that when my father, Lawrence Baird, passes away, who's not my biological father, that he leaves as an inheritance just as much to me as he does his real son, his biological son, Bruce. Because I have been adopted, although my name is not the same, I have been adopted in that family. The same goes true when mother dies. When all those things take place, we have become a part of a family. I am just as much a Baird as my brother is. It's adoption. That's where you say, you are mine. And I have no doubt about that. I have a niece named Amber. Amber was actually adopted. Her name was changed. Her last name now is Misham. And my sister adopted Amber when she was a teenage girl. Amber has blessed not only has Amber been blessed by the family she's been adopted into, but she's been a great blessing to our family. She had her name changed, and now she carries the same name as her family. Now, when we become a Christian, when you become adopted, when God says, I want you, I'll pay the price by giving my son Jesus to die for you. When I pay that price and I adopt you, you will wear my name. And you know what name he gives you? Christian. You wear the name of Jesus. You say, I am a Christian. So how important is it that you keep that name pure and clean? How important, if you've been adopted into a family and all of a sudden you're going to get this magnificent inheritance, how important is it that you wear that name Christian proudly? And how important is it that you take care of that name, because you used to didn't be that and now you've been adopted and you all of a sudden have this glorious, magnificent inheritance because God loved you enough to adopt you into his family. And not just as a servant, not as a slave. If you'll notice the verse, he adopted you as a son, which means you get all the rights, all the inheritances, all the things, the privileges that come with being a family member. And that is just amazing how blessed you and I are by being adopted by the Lord, adopted as a son. God pays for you and I. He says, I love you as my son. He gives Jesus for the price, and we are blessed. Notice the third thing. You've been chosen, you've been adopted. Notice verse 6. There's a lot of others in there we could have covered, but notice verse 6. He says, you have been adopted as sons through Jesus Christ according to his pleasure and will, to the praise of his glorious grace. And he'll go on to talk a little bit more about that, that God has, and here's your third point, freely, God has given us his grace. God has given us his grace. And if you'll notice, it says freely given his grace. Freely. You know what freely given is? That's where you get lots of it. You know the difference between, you ever sit down in a restaurant and you need some pepper out of the pepper shaker and nothing comes out and you just have to work and work and work and work and work, or a salt shaker and you just have to work to get anything out of it. The little holes are clogged up and it's frustrating. God's grace, if you can view it as a shaker, it has got a magnificent hole and it just pours freely in your life. You dump, and it's kind of like the salt shaker. You're not expecting to come out quite so much, and you're going, oh, no, I have just covered my food in salt. God's grace shaker freely pours out in your life. You have been given grace. And it is great to know that The thing is that you deserve not grace, you deserve justice. You deserve punishment. And yet God is going to give you His grace. He is going to shower it on you. And not just in a shaker, but in a bucket, by the gallons full, by the dump trucks full. And that's what I need in my life. We don't earn it. He gives it freely. We are blessed. You know why He gives that grace? He gives that grace because He loves us. Even though sometimes we don't think, we don't do the right thing, we don't say the right thing. I know God gets frustrated with me sometimes. I know God probably, I'm sure in your life, God gets frustrated with you sometimes. I asked Connor if I could tell a story about when he was little. I try hard most of the time. I have different family members. Usually Cooper, he's too young to care, so I can tell whatever I want to on him. Connor, he doesn't really care. Parker, you got to ask. There's a few things Parker don't want. Taylor, he doesn't care. Lee, I always make it, I find out the hard way, ask before you tell something. So there's certain things you do and don't tell when you're preaching. Connor, when he was little, when Taylor and Parker came, pretty smooth in raising, from the sense of just, you know, whatever you told them to do, they were pretty good at. Connor came along when he was young. Connor was a very strong-willed child. You probably had, how many of you in here have had a strong-willed child, or Noah? He was a strong-willed child. And I mean, just all strong. Strong will, strong spirit. And just lots of times when he was very small, you'd tell him to do something and he'd look at you and just keep doing whatever it was that he was doing, because that was what he wanted to do. Very strong will child. Somebody asked me one time, said, did you try the Dobson book, Strong Will Child? And I said, yeah, I read it. That didn't work very well, but I beat him with it, and that helped a whole lot. One time when he was small, we found out one of the things that worked real well with us was the fact that we learned one time, he'd sit there on the floor, we'd say, Connor, it's time to get up, let's get ready, let's go to bed. He'd just keep right on doing, Connor, we got to get up, we got to get ready for bed. And then one time I asked the question, now think about it, this is really a silly question, but I asked him, I said, Connor, do you want me to spank you? Which is really a dumb question to ask any kid, because no kid ever says, yeah, I'd just love for you to, whip me good. I asked him, I said, do you want me to spank you? You're not minding me. And up he went and right to his bed, did exactly what we asked him to do. And I thought, man, that was good. And I think I even may have taken out a pen and paper and said, do you want me to spank you? I tried it again later, and he went along with that. All of a sudden we had found a phrase that was beginning to work, and I was thinking, forget Dobson's book. I'm writing a book, and it's going to be called Do You Want Me to Spank You? I mean, the kid is responding to this. It just so happened we had a visiting preacher one Sunday in Tuya. Missionary, love them missionaries, but sometimes they can go long, as you know, overtime, sometimes double overtime on their reports. And it was the Sunday that Lee looked at me and said, it is your turn with the boy. You're not preaching. You can have him. I love Sundays because I'd get a break from him by getting to go up and preach for a little while. And the preacher got up, the missionary, and he started speaking. And he went into overtime, and he went into double overtime, and he was really going a long time. By that time, Connor and I was wanting to just choke him, and he was wanting to choke me. We were just doing this. I mean, just everything wasn't working. He was tired. He wanted out of there. And I looked down at him as he was laying in the floor mad, and I said, do you want me to take you outside and spank you? And you know what he said? Yeah. if it'll get me out of here, I'll take one. Connor, as he has grown, has matured. As you grow, you mature, and you learn to work past that. And he has come out of a lot of his strong nature, although that's still his spirit. He's come out of that. Now, you understand that even though Connor is a very strong-willed child when he was young, he didn't make me love him any less. It did not make my salt shaker of love, my grace that I poured out in his life, all of a sudden go, well, I'm just not blessing you. I'm just not going to love you as much because you're just not doing. The same is with us when we're young spiritually. A lot of times we look out and, I know God gets frustrated with me because I get strong-willed. God says, do this. And I go, but Lord, I think it'd be better if you do this. Instead of, Lord, would you bless this? Would you like me to do this? I say, Lord, I'm going to do this, and you can bless me if you want. And I become a person who just kind of becomes strong-willed spiritually. And I have to remember, as I grow, hopefully I grow out of that spiritual strong will that says things my way, and I start looking more at things what He wants. But the thing you have to catch with His grace and with His love is even when you're strong-willed, even when you mess up, even when you make mistakes, even when you go against what God wants you to do, it doesn't change the fact He still loves you as a father, and He still loves to pour out grace in your life. He wants you to overcome that strong spirit and that strong will. And He wants you to become more like His Son. But as a child of God, He doesn't love you less. And He doesn't say, well, I'm just not going to pour out grace in His life. He has freely poured out grace in your life. Look at the fourth point down here in verse 7. In Him we have redemption. We have been redeemed through His blood. That's the fourth thing. Paul talks about the way to be forgiven, and that's Jesus. We have redemption. That's the only way. Jesus said, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. Nobody comes to the Father except by me. The only way to be redeemed is through Jesus' blood. I read a story a long time ago about a guy that was in a hospital for trying to kill himself. And they had checked him in, and a nurse had come in and said, what's wrong with you? And he said, well, I tried to kill myself, and I'm recovering. You know, I took too much medicine. He said, I just want to die. I want to die. I want to end it all. And a little nurse, this was years ago, came in, and she brought him one of them little bitty New Testaments. A lot of times kids get at school at a young age. And said, here you go. Read this. You want to die? This will take your life. Die to yourself. Began to read that Bible and began to look at that Bible. And later, the story tells that I was told that he actually became a Christian, a follower. You want to die to yourself? It comes through Jesus Christ. Paul said, I have been crucified with Christ. You want to be connected to Jesus if you want redemption. Want to end it all? Try repenting and confessing, believing, being baptized, and living forever. That's the way it comes. Look at the fifth thing. We'll move along before we run out of time. Down in verse 10, all these things to be put into effect when times come and will have reached their fulfillment, to bring all things in heaven and on earth together under one head, even Christ. He says God has united us in all things, verse 10. God has united us in all things. You're blessed because I am not in this alone. You're not in this alone. That God put other people around you to strengthen you, other people around you to encourage you, then you don't have to say, hey, I got to do this all by myself. No, God says you come together as a church. You support one another as a family. There's no solos. There's no lone rangers. It's just me against the world. It takes everybody. There was a young boy who was a visitor to Vacation Bible School. He only had one arm. And when he came in, his teacher thought, oh, I got to be sensitive. I got to be careful that we don't do something that is going to embarrass him in any way. Right toward the end of class, the teacher made the comment as they had been studying about church. He said, let's take our hands and let's do, this is the church and this is the steeple, and open it and let's all the people. Just as soon as she got that, she remembered the little boy that only had one arm. Sitting next to him was a little girl that was a pretty outspoken girl by the name of Sally. And Sally said, Jimmy, give me a hand. I'll use my hand, you use your hand, and we'll build the church together. Boy, that's the way God wanted. That is a good sermon right there. That's what God was looking for, being united in all things. We have been blessed. You have been picked to be on His team. You have been adopted. You have God's grace. You have God's redemption. And you have been united. We do this together. We sang a little song a while ago. A little song just in the length. Huge, huge song in the words. There's nothing small in importance about this song. Sing this one verse with me again, if you will. God is so good. God is so good. God is so good. He's so good to me. God is good, and He is good to you, and you have been blessed. Blessed beyond your most wildest imagination. You can't fathom the way that God has blessed you. We're going to sing an invitation song at this time. If you need to respond this morning, we can help you with anything. We'd love to if we can. Won't you please come as we stand and we sing this song.